We are recording. Boom, 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 boom. All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
Sweet Christmas.
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, Brian Reese.
Happy holidays!
Happy holidays to you as well. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Is it?
Everywhere I turn.
Yeah, it's the most wonderful time of the year, Paul.
That's what I've heard.
Are you gonna have snow there in the mountains outside of Denver?
No, we are not. Well, it looks like we're not going to right now. Hey, it's 50 degrees right now in December.
We're in the upper 40s right now after a month and a half of 20-degree weather. So, of course, we get the snow on every week except Christmas week, it looks like. So,
no, it's actually, it's balmy. It's downright balmy here. My daughter, of course, who's back from Hawaii, thinks it's freezing.
Well, I would imagine so.
But it's all perspective. Okay, well, today on the program, we have a very special episode. It's an end-of-the-year special. It's the Blossom episode, exactly. We will be discussing the Batman Adventures Holiday Special and Power Man and Iron Fist Sweet Christmas. But before that, Brian and I have picked our favorite comics of the year, and we'd like to share them. I should point out to everyone, this was supposed to be a list of 5. Brian picked 7.
Which was down from 10.
It was a good job.
I did a good job.
Yes, you did. I did everything right. And only picked 5. I'm a rule follower.
Who's a good boy then?
That's right. So do you want to go first, Brian?
Sure. We should also note that I have a worst of, which is a whole other issue. But sure. I mean, how do we want to do this?
Let's go back and forth. So, like,
all right. Well,
you start with your 7th favorite. I'll start with my 5th, and we'll work our way down our list.
Okay. So at number 7, and rankings are kind of silly at the end of the day. I mean, you know, what's the difference between 7 and 6? Who knows? But anyway.
Yeah, it's all subjective at this point.
So I'm just going to do 7, 6, and 5 to get us kind of evened up. So at number 7, I have Descender by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. At number 6, I have Hot Lunch Special by Elliot Rahal and Jorge Fornes. And at number 5, I have Southern Bastards by Jason Aaron and Jason Latour. So Descender is this great sort of sci-fi epic look at what is humanity and what is artificial intelligence with some of Dustin Nguyen's best art of his life. Hot Lunch Special, which is on Aftershock Comics, is a Midwest noirish crime family saga that takes place in the food industry of all things. And it's pretty brutal. It's pretty harsh.
Well, the food industry is pretty cutthroat.
It is pretty. Yes, it is. And Southern Bastards, which I think everybody probably knows by now, but Southern Bastards is one of perhaps the great Southern noir comics maybe ever made. I realize that's a small pool to take from, but what Jason Aaron and Jason Latour do both visually and in the dialogue is pretty special. So of the comics that came out this year, these three, these are all three genre pieces. In many ways, we have sci-fi and two kind of hard-boiled crime comics, but I think they really have been hitting on point this year. So those are 7, 6, and 5.
I agree with you on Southern Bastards. That's a great comic, but it wasn't technically this year, so because it's been coming out for a while,
right?
So I was reluctant.
I'm talking ongoings.
Okay, good, because I actually did pick one that wasn't ongoing, so it makes me feel better about my picks.
Descender's an ongoing as well. I'm just picking ongoings.
Okay, the majority of the ones I picked are specifically this year, but I did pick one ongoing, which I thought you were going to get mad at me for, but apparently not.
No.
Okay. Cool. So I'll do 5, my 5,
okay.
My 5th pick is Cover by Brian Michael Bendis with art by David Mack.
Oh, Good choice.
It is one of his. It is his one of his new Jinx World titles. Fairly early in its run right now, but it is so much fun. This is like Bendis at his. At his best, it's funny. I don't know if you've read it or not.
It's highly referential too.
Yes, well, it's a comic book creator who gets involved in espionage inadvertently, and he uses his, you know, traveling to conventions around the world as his cover for being a spy, and it's really funny. The main character's cluelessness just makes it hilarious and entertaining. So it's Bendis being good again.
It's. Make Bendis great again.
Yes, indeed.
Coming to number four, to really throw you off, I'm going with Strangers in Paradise by Terry Moore.
Really?
Yes. I was very excited. Terry Moore revisited the world of Strangers in Paradise for its 25th anniversary. Or 25th anniversary. So he went back, and apparently it's going to be 10 issues. We haven't completed it yet, but it was very exciting to see Strangers in Paradise return. And I think Terry Moore is still hitting on not all of his post Strangers in Paradise stuff has been what I would consider to be great, but his return to the characters of Strangers in Paradise, I think it's been quite pleasant, and perhaps I'm working on a little bit of nostalgia, but I'd like to think I'm at least critical enough to say that the story he's weaving currently in his return has been pretty gripping. So
excellent.
So Strangers in Paradise by Terry Moore is my fourth favorite comic of the year.
Fantastic. Okay. So my fourth pick is Coda by Cy Spurrier and drawn by Mateus Bergara. That is from Boom Studios.
Boom!
Yes. Basically, this is, it's a post-apocalyptic Lord of the Rings. You know, if you picture high fantasy and Dungeons and Dragons mixed with Mad Max, that's the story. And it's a lot of fun, and the art alone is fantastic.
And this is a comic I have not read, so I cannot fully comment.
It's very good. Again, I recommend it. That's why it's on my list.
Which is excellent, because now I have a new comic to read.
Yeah, and it's fun to just say, Boom! Studios.
Yes, it is. And you always have to have the exclamation point.
Absolutely. So what's your number three?
Well, number three, carrying on what apparently is now a theme as I look through my list, I'm going with Stray Bullets by David and Maria Lapham.
Really?
Cool. Again, it's an older comic. It was revived a few years ago to much relief. But it's up there with Cerebus as one of the great sort of long ongoing comic book series. So, and it's this year, it just, the comic is nuts. And David Lapham, if you've read any of his other work, of course, has a very unique perspective on things, but Stray Bullets, it's the Sunshine and Roses arc. It takes the characters on a very strange and peculiar ride, and it's been a lot of fun, and it's one of the comics I most look forward to every month.
Excellent. So my number three is These Savage Shores. It's by Ram V and Sumit Kumar, and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, out of Vault Comics. This I don't know if you've heard of this, Ryan.
I have heard of, but again, another comic I haven't read.
It's really wonderful. Basically a horror comic, but it's about a vampire who gets exiled from England. This is during colonial periods in India. He goes to India and basically thinks that he's going to be, you know, big man on campus because he's a vampire with these, you know, undisciplined savages there in colonial India. But he finds out that there are many older and wiser monsters that are much better than a puny vampire. So it plays on the notions of colonial superiority. And again, the artwork in this is absolutely beautiful.
Intriguing.
So again, that's a fantastic read.
Excellent. Something else I'm going to have to look up now. So for me at number two, Exit Stage Left, The Snagglepuss Chronicles, Mark Russell and Mike Feehan.
It's the Murgatroyd.
Indeed. Have you read it, Paul?
I have not read it. I have heard very, very good things about it, but I have not read it.
It's basically reimagining Snagglepuss as a Tennessee Williams type closeted playwright during the House Un-American Activities era of the United States. So it deals with a lot of very interesting social issues. You know, it's and Mark Russell, who also did incredible work with the Flintstones, of all things.
No, I was going to say, because that was one of my favorites of last year, was the reimagining of the Flintstones. So,
but what Mark Russell does, the series is both very sad. There's a lot of pathos in it. It's funny, but it's also incredibly contemporaneously relevant. And it's comics. It's Snagglepuss. But it's Snagglepuss like you've never read before. And it is, I think, a rather remarkable achievement in comics writing. And Mike Feehan does an amazing job on the art, both mimicking sort of the more Hanna-Barbera style, while at the same time giving it a sharper sort of contemporary sheen. It's really, I can't recommend this comic high enough. It was very difficult not to make this my top comic of the year.
Yeah. You're not the only one who has said similar things. So I guess I'm going to have to go out and get me some Snagglepuss.
You are.
Okay. So my number two is probably an obvious one. It's Mr. Miracle.
Before you say anything further, can I give you my number one?
Which is?
Mr. Miracle by Tom King and Mitch Gerads.
There you go. It's just, it's easily one of the best comics I've read in a long, long time.
Absolutely. I don't love everything Tom King does. I mean, we've talked about The Vision, where I thought The Vision was very good, but I was not necessarily buying it as like the most recent, you know, iteration of The Watchmen or what have you. On Batman, he writes some incredible stories, and some of them where I'm scratching my head. But with Mr. Miracle, the reason it's my number one is nothing came close. At least in the major comics houses. And by major, I mean, I include like Image, IDW, Boom, those. I mean, there's all kinds of great like web comics and Kickstarter type comics. There's a million great comics being made out there right now that we're not covering on this, but for a comic put out by a major publisher, it's visually and thematically stunning.
Oh yeah. The way it deals with depression and responsibility, it's funny and it's tragic all at the same time. It is some of the best storytelling. Honestly, I toyed with this being number one for me as well, but the one I chose for number one is because basically it surprised me more than this. Mr. Miracle I knew was going to be great. The one I chose as number one surprised me. So that's why it edged out Mr. Miracle. Would you like to know my number one?
I would like to know your number one.
Immortal Hulk by Al Ewing, with art by Joe Bennett.
Huh.
Yeah. I
can safely say that I did not see that coming.
No, I loved this comic. And I haven't read a Hulk comic in a long time that interested me. You know, I kind of thought, well, maybe this character's sort of run his course. But no, I didn't think anything new could be done with him. But this one, like I said, this one took me by surprise. It's basically just a straight up horror comic. The premise being, you know, Bruce Banner was killed back in Civil War II.
Right.
But you can't kill Bruce Banner. So Hulk comes back as sort of an undead zombie Hulk.
As one does.
Yeah. And it uses the original conceit. Yeah. I don't know.
Walking Hulk?
Exactly. But it originally, when Hulk was created, he would come out at night and then Banner would come out during the day.
Right.
And it's back to that again, where Hulk comes out at night and Banner's during the day. And Hulk is intelligent, but savage, while Banner, because he was shot in the head, is still smart, but he's not the super genius. And it's a really great play on those two characters. It's brutal and it's horrific, funny. I was really taken by this one.
Huh.
Yeah. And Al Ewing's just great.
It's Al Ewing is, which is interesting. I mean, Al Ewing is, he's written a lot of Marvel comics by this point, and they all get canceled.
They do.
It's like the name Al Ewing, for some reason, tends to be the kiss of death, which is weird, at least sales-wise, which leads to the cancellations. But it's weird to me. It's because the Al Ewing stuff that I've read, I mean, he did that great kind of Loki run.
Yeah.
but it's he's got like a really fascinating take on the characters that he writes, and it's always fascinated me that he can't seem to get the commercial accolades that he does, the critical accolades.
Yeah, well, this one seems to be doing well. When I looked it up, its sales are good, and people seem to like it. And if you're a Defenders fan, I don't know if you know Defenders is coming back.
I do know Defenders is coming back.
Yeah, so the Immortal Hulk version of the Hulk is going to be in the Defenders, which is very cool.
I think that is on my pull list.
So, shall we get into your worst of the year?
I think for me I should throw out a couple honorable mentions. So Black Crown, the imprint, Shelley Bond's imprint at IDW, is doing some really good work that I didn't feel was quite into like the top seven or whatever I cut it down to. But there are some really good writers and artists who are working with the Black Crown imprint, which is essentially it's IDW's version of Vertigo. You have Kid Lobotomy, The Euthanauts, Assassinistas, House of Mock, Punk's Not Dead, which is killer, and Lodger, which is also another David Latham.
Yeah, Lodger's very good.
But I think Black Crown, I would like to give a shout out to Black Crown, which I think is really setting itself up to be a lot of fun. And the titles that they have put out so far have been a lot of fun. So I hope next year to see some of those titles appear in sort of my favorite list. So I did want to give a shout out to that. And I also want to give a shout out to just Jeff Lemire in general. And I put Descender on this already, but he did really strong work this year on Royal City, which ended, and Gideon Falls, which is becoming a very intriguing series.
Yeah, Gideon Falls.
Those are titles that kind of are bubbling under as well that I think deserve a lot of attention.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do my honorable mention, which is Lost Light from IDW. It's by James Roberts with several different artists. It's been ongoing for 2 years, just ended this year. It's a Transformers comic, and I am not a Transformers guy. I'm not a big fan of Transformers, but this particular story or this particular comic is fantastic. Again, that's another one that completely threw me. It's like, because all the characters they're not just big monsters, or not monsters, big robots who transform. They all have distinct personality and voices. They have a really intriguing storyline. And there's some tender moments in it, which I was just like, no way, this is a Transformers comic. So it's good comics, and I recommend it. Yeah.
All right. I'm not sure I'm going to rush out to a Transformers comic, but...
I took it on a recommendation of someone else and was just going to give it like maybe an issue or two, and I realized, I just thought to myself, nah, I'm not going to read a Transformers comic. Next thing you know, I read the entire run, and it's fantastic. So
I might have to check it out.
Yeah. Let's go. Cool. Well, I might recommend it somewhere along the line for this here podcast. So,
well,
spoilers.
Well, I'm intrigued. So, following, you know, something positive, I'll follow up with something negative and what I thought was the worst comic of the year. And while I'm not sure that it is really the worst comic of the year, I think that what it represents and many aspects of it, it's the worst comic of the year for a lot of reasons other than just how bad it is as a comic book. And that is New Challengers by Scott Snyder and Aaron Gillespie, with art by Andy Kubert, Sandu Floria, and I think 20 or 30 other artists who had to fill in to create basically 6 issues of mud. The art is terrible. It's just terrible. It's just dark and muddy. It's indicative of a period of DC that is justifiably mocked. It's, you know, it's the grim and gritty, but it's not even grim and gritty. It's just bland. And the writing is, Scott Snyder, I think, maybe wrote the first issue. So New Challengers was supposed to be part of the New Age of Heroes. And New Age of Heroes was that thing that DC did where they were like putting the artist's name first or the writer's name second, and they were going to mimic the Marvel style where the artist would come up with the plot and then the writer would, you know, sort of fill in the dialogue. All of that is fine, except so they bring in these artists and they advertise, you know, Jim Lee and Kenneth Rocafort and Andy Kubert, and you know, there were several series that came through with this, you know, new age of heroes or whatever. Most of the titles couldn't keep the artist past two issues.
That's a problem.
That's a problem when you're advertising the artist over the writer. And I'm not anti-artist. Yeah, I'm very pro-artist, but it's when you're advertising the artist over the writer and the artist only can do an issue or two. And the whole series was big. The whole initiative was big, dumb, stupid 90s.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at the covers right now, and it does have that 90s feel to it.
And with new challengers, there's one title that I think will survive, depending on if, and let's revisit him again, the loss of Jeff Lemire doesn't kill it. And that's the Terrifics, which was probably the best Fantastic Four comic released this year. The Terrifics is the only one that brought in like kind of humor and sort of fun. The new challengers, the reason I picked new challengers is, first of all, the pedigree. It was Scott Snyder. Should have been a lot better. It was awful. It was besides the art being muddy, the plot was muddy. And it was plodding, and it was dull, and the characters were unlikable. And it's the Challengers of the Unknown. It should have been bright and fun and action-packed with, you know, these kind of crazy adventures. And instead, it was just this awful, turgid, you know, supernatural garbage.
Okay.
let me tell you how I really feel.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, if I needed a reason to continue not reading it, there you go.
And for some reason, I forced myself to read all six issues because I was like, it was a six-issue. I think it may have started off as being intended for a longer run, but it ended up being six issues. And that was about six and a half issues too long.
Wow.
It really represents sort of all of the wrong-headed decisions DC had made for years and years and years and years and years. Yeah.
But overall, though, DC's really doing a great job.
But it cast a pall on sort of the rebirth sort of idea where, you know, they have all these great things coming up.
That's Paul, P-A-L-L, not P-A-L-L.
Yes. So,
but
opinions, I got a few.
Yeah. To end this on a positive note, I would like to give my recommendation for what I think is going to be a great comic.
Excellent.
There's only one issue released so far. It just came out last week, I believe. And that it's Die by Kieran Gillen.
Yes.
By Image Comics. The first issue, if the entire series is like this first issue, it's going to be a classic. Absolutely brilliant stuff. To let you know what the premises, it's a group of kids who are playing a role-playing game, but the die are enchanted and they get sucked away into an actual fantasy world. It then jumps ahead several years, and they all the kids come back. They're obviously traumatized. We cut to them being adults, all dealing with this trauma. We don't know what happened. They're just dealing with this trauma. And as adults, they all get sucked back into that role-playing game again.
Huh.
Yeah, and it's real. I mean, the writing is fantastic. The art is fantastic. It's such
is this the plot of Riverdale?
It's Jumanji, basically. it's Jumanji, but with actual consequences and horror.
Right.
Yeah, and it's like I said, if this continues, it's hard to judge an entire series by one issue.
Right.
But if it continues like this, boy, this is going to be something fantastic for 2019.
Oh, good. I have that comic sitting in my stack. I haven't gotten to it yet, but it's in my possession. I'm very much looking forward to reading it, especially with your recommendation now.
Yeah, go for it. As soon as we're done here, go pick it up. With that, let's take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk some Christmas comics.
All right.
Can I get a tall chai?
And a large black coffee.
And I suppose you're here with no agenda, as per usual?
On the contrary, I'm here for comics.
I think I can help all of you. Hello, I'm the caffeinated Clinton Robison, and I host a podcast called Coffee and Comics. On this podcast, I summarize, review, and discuss comic book issues, stories, and related media, usually in the span of time it takes to have a cup of coffee. Sometimes I'm joined by a guest, and sometimes I'm flying solo. So pour the coffee, take a sip, and turn up the volume as you listen to the Coffee and Comics Podcast. Available on iTunes, Stitcher, and directly on coffeeandcomicspodcast.blogspot.com. And remember, this is where the comics are never too old and the coffee is never too cold.
And we're back.
Brian.
Paul.
You chose as your holiday selection the Batman Adventures Holiday Special.
The Batman Adventures Holiday Special, Issue 1. There was no Issue 2. This is from 1994 or 95, depending on how you look at the cover date. And it is written by mostly by Bruce Timm and Paul Dini, and with a lot of various artists, Dan Ribba, Keith Altieri, Glenn Murakami, and Ronnie Del Cameron, I believe. So a lot of those were the illustrators for the Batman animated series. And of course, Batman Adventures was a spinoff of the Batman animated series, the great Batman animated series that introduced Harley Quinn and featured Mark Hamill as the Joker.
The best Joker.
Yes. So we're talking about Christmas stories or holiday stories or seasonal stories. And so there's a wealth of those out there in the world. I mean, almost every comic book publisher has done a dearth of, you know, either individual issues that are Christmas related or, you know, sort of 14-page backups, or in the case of Batman Adventures, it's a holiday special that features five sort of small kind of mini stories. So there are a great many, you know, sort of Christmas themed, holiday themed comic book stories out there. And we couldn't even begin to scratch the surface. And there's some real classics out there, and we'll probably cover some of those down the line in the 40 or 50 years that we continue to do this podcast.
40 or 50 years? Really?
Sure. Why not?
Okay. I'll be 100.
Tis the season for hope.
Okay.
So,
oh yeah, with all the, you know, the cloning and whatnot, but we'll live on in some way.
Yes, just chop our heads off and keep on going. So again, for my selection, I picked the holiday special and
podcasting head in a jar. I'm just thinking.
Well, we do seem to deal a lot with disembodied heads.
It is true. Okay. Sorry. I stepped on you. Please tell me about your holiday special.
Disembodied heads, I think, should be one of our running themes.
Indeed.
So for the Batman Adventures, the holiday special, I kind of wanted to focus. The all five stories are kind of fun and entertaining, and they're done in the cartoon style of the animated series, the Batman animated series of the time. But the one story in this issue that I kind of wanted to focus on is, of course, the Harley and the Ivy, which I think is, I would put in the pantheon of great Christmas stories. And essentially, it's a short story where Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy are hanging out. We'll call it hanging out. One of them is in a state of undress in some ratty apartment. It's December 17th. They're bored. Harley wants a tree. Poison Ivy says, no tree. And so they hatch a plan to kidnap Bruce Wayne and force him to take them Christmas shopping. Much hilarity ensues.
Yes. It's just a charming little story. I the funny thing is about this story, when I was reading it, I couldn't help myself but read it in all the voices.
Right.
You know, especially Harley, even that Brooklyn accent was just playing in my head. It's done really well. I mean, it really does invoke that the feeling of the series, which is just, you know, it's a classic.
And the art is incredible. I mean, it's the facial expressions alone
Yeah, it's wonderful. There's one little panel where Harley accidentally throws Bruce out the window, and it's
down the
elevator shaft. That's what it is.
Down the elevator shaft.
And it's sort of like a double. You know, you see her looking down the shaft and then looking panicked. I don't know. It's just, like I said, charming is the word that keeps coming back.
Well, and then, but then you have the great dialogue where they're, you know, she's like, I think we killed Bruce Wayne, and Poison Ivy was like, well, we were going to do that anyway, so.
Yeah, no loss.
No great loss. And then they're like, oh, yeah, okay, sure. But what happens, of course, is that, so Poison Ivy sneaks into Bruce Wayne's mansion. He's having a Christmas party. And, of course, you have all of the eligible ladies of Gotham who are all there, and Bruce is standing under the mistletoe, and so everyone wants to kiss Bruce Wayne, and so Poison Ivy sneaks into there and gives him a kiss with her, you know,
mind control lipstick.
Yeah. and so then, of course, Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn show up and get him into his limousine, and they go to Mayfield's shopping center, and of course, you know, Bruce Wayne is of course under the control, so they go on a shopping spree, and there's a couple like full page like tiny little panels of them shopping, which you have to read. Just to and you have to look at to fully appreciate.
Yeah, it's the comics equivalent of the montage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the romantic comedy montage.
Right, and of course, as things turn out, so it's important to note that because Poison Ivy will not allow Harley Quinn to get a tree at the end of the story, it is the large Christmas tree in the shopping center that then ultimately defeats and captures them.
Yep, and she finally gets her tree.
But the fact that Batman, while is a player in this, and Bruce Wayne, who is a player in this, is so minor to the interactions between Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy. And in some ways, this is seminal, not just as a fun 14-page Christmas story, but this particular comic, this story, is one of the prime stories that establishes the relationship, however you want to read it, between Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn. And it's a relationship, the roots that are laid in this story are still used to this day.
Yeah, there's a lot of subtext going on here.
Yeah.
If you choose to read it.
But it doesn't have to be like, you know, the sexual subtext, which is very downplayed,
but oh, yeah,
just their friendship and the way that they interact with each other, which is used to great comedic effect throughout the history of the comics since this, but is also used to very serious effect, particularly in a recent comic, Heroes in Crisis, regardless of how one feels about that particular series that is currently ongoing. But I think when I look for like Christmas comics or comics that take place over the holidays, whichever holiday it may be, I tend to lean towards this type of story, which is short, frantic, and fun.
Yes. And they really are a great comedy duo.
Yeah. And with all the slapstick, because it's the whole story is basically slapstick.
Yeah, yeah, and it's definitely geared towards kids,
yeah,
or a younger audience at that.
Sort of. I mean, there's some adult things in there, although, again, you know, the sort of we're going to kill Bruce Wayne anyway.
Yeah, but that was the animated series in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kids cartoon, but with not mature themes, but you know, they were telling good stories. So that's a lovely little story. I do want to just talk quickly about the White Christmas, which is the Mr. Freeze.
Oh, story. Right. Which is, I think, yes, because there were a couple other good, a couple of them are toss-ups, but the White Christmas one is actually quite good as well.
Yeah. So that's, you know, so it's Mr. Freeze escapes Arkham Asylum, and he has a weapon that creates snow and freezes things, as Mr. Freeze is wont to do. So you think, you know, it's played off as if he's going to wreak havoc, but all he really wants to do is make sure it snows on Christmas for his dead wife.
Yes.
Because she loved White Christmas so much.
And they propose, and I think the story sets up that he proposed to her.
Right. They got married on Christmas. Yeah.
On Christmas or Christmas Eve, and it was snowing. And it's quite an affecting story. It's one of those, it's, you know, it's definitely, there's not as much of the slapstick.
Oh, no. This is definitely a serious story all the way
through. There's a lot of action or whatever, but you see, there's the great scene where, you know, in What Changes Batman, you know, Batman was basically going to beat the crap out of Mr. Freeze, as he always does. But this ends up in a cemetery where Victor Freeze's wife is buried, as is for continuity reasons that I can't explain, but for the purpose of this story and in the Batman animated world, Thomas and Martha Wayne are also buried. And so Batman sees that their tombstone. And then a couple pages later, when he captures Mr. Freeze and Mr. Freeze in front of Mr. Freeze's wife's tombstone, there's that moment of grace that Batman then gives to Victor Freeze.
Right. And it's very touching. It has to be said that the animated series, you know, Mr. Freeze was, you know, kind of a joke character, but the animated series actually gave him a serious backstory and gave him some gravitas. You know, I really like what they do with Mr. Freeze, because he's actually a very conflicted bad guy. A lot of nuance there.
And I think that is also like a sort of a nuance to a story that has been carried forward as well. Continuity comics.
Well, yeah, it's amazing what the animated series did for the comics. I mean, not only did, you know, it create Harley Quinn, which is easily one of the most popular and biggest moneymakers for DC right now, but just the presentation of Batman and some of his villains. I mean, his rogues gallery got a new life through that series. We can't say enough about the Batman the Animated Series.
We can't. And it didn't. It ran for, what, 2-3 years?
I want to say 3 years. Might have been
the 4. Comic, the comic outlasted the TV show.
Yeah, because it eventually became Batman and Robin.
Before.
Which was good, unlike the Schumacher. Batman and Robin.
Which is a whole different topic.
Yes. And just to end off, there's a little scene right at the end where Commissioner Gordon and Batman have a cup of coffee for New Year's.
Right.
And it's just really nice. Two old friends, basically.
Which they do every, it's suggested in there that they do this every year on New Year's Day at like 1 o'clock in the morning or something. It's, they always meet for coffee at this specific place.
Yep. And Batman always pays and leaves just as Commissioner Gordon turns around.
Right. Yes.
It's just very nice. You know,
the whole comic, I recommend the whole comic, even the first kind of story, the Jolly Old St. Nicholas with Harvey Bullock and Renee Mund as Santa Claus. It is worth it alone just for Harvey Bullock as Santa Claus.
Exactly.
And, you know, there's like a further story involving Clayface and Batgirl and what have you. But it's the Harvey Bullock, Renee Montoya interaction on that one that's a lot of fun as well. So I think you can get this on Comicology for like $3.
I can tell you exactly, because I bought it on Comicology for $1.99.
$1.99, there you go. And it's 50-some pages of just fun, holiday-themed Batman, you know, stories.
Yep,
and
absolutely worth it.
Definitely stands as one of my favorites amongst, like we said, a dearth of holiday-themed stories and comics. So,
yeah. And speaking of holiday-themed comics,
you have a recommendation, Paul.
I do. I have a little intro that I'll read off to you.
Sounds good. You are prepared.
I am prepared. A bulletproof black man from Harlem with super strength and a billionaire white guy raised in a mystical city that knows martial arts and has a glowing hand. This pairing really shouldn't work, but it does. And in 2016, writer David F. Walker brought the two characters back together in a run that focused on their camaraderie and highlighted the silliness and emphasized the fun inherent in the pairing.
And what pair is, what duo is this, Paul?
Power Man and Iron Fist.
Aha!
Yes. And in the first annual, in December of that year, we got a holiday story. Sweet Christmas. In this story, we find the two, Luke Cage and Danny Rand, with Luke's daughter, Danielle, at a toy store on Christmas Eve, attempting to buy the latest hot toy, Schnuckies. A Pokemon-type thing that all the kids and many adults crave. Soon they are joined by a distraught Jessica Drew, Spider-Woman, and a rather cranky Damian Hellstrom, the son of Satan. And if you think this can't get weirder than that, you're wrong. Because soon we find that the toy store owner is none other than Krampus himself, and the Schnuckies are demon spawn, and the battle for the souls of all children ensues that can only be won with the help of Kris Kringle himself. Written with pure joy by David F. Walker and drawn with cartoonish delight by Scott Hepburn, Power Man and Iron Fist Sweet Christmas is a fun holiday romp. What did you think, Brian?
Well, first of all, how was Sweet Christmas not used in a Christmas story before this?
I don't know. It seems so obvious.
Oh, no. I mean, it's in keeping with, I like the fact that both of us picked, we went for fun and lighthearted over some of the more overly serious or important message-oriented holiday stories. So, no, this was a hoot to read. And it's the interaction between Danny Rand and Luke Cage is always fun to read. And I think David Walker in that Power Man and Iron Fist series did an incredible job.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too.
With the characterization between the two. And I think it really shines through in this annual.
Well, it shows that, you know, they really actually like each other and they're friends. I mean, this pairing has been around for a long time, since the 70s. And the way that relationship has evolved, I mean, they're really good friends with each other. And it shows.
And Danny Rand's, like, interaction with Danielle, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones's daughter, is also great and is used to great effect in this particular story as well.
And I really like the fact that, you know, you have Jessica Drew, Spider-Woman, who's has a newborn herself. That was a long-running in her own book. But she comes to Luke Cage to get parenting advice. And that is really fun, too, that little dynamic of, you know, two superhero parents trying to help each other out. And, you know, she's very upset. You know, she's brand new to this. She's a single mom. And she doesn't think she's very good at it. And Luke says to her, well, did you leave him on a train yet? Man, you're doing fine.
And I love the fact that Luke Cage actually has a yellow puffy coat as well.
Yes, he does. Some of the exclamations that Luke Cage throws out there are fantastic. My favorite being, what the make my funk the P-funk? That is so good.
And there's a point where so Danielle says fiddle faddle,
watch your language,
which in the regular comic right is Luke Cage's replacement for another word that starts with F.
Exactly. Yeah, and Danny just has to say watch your language, sweetie.
But the story itself is great too, and it's again it's that mix of like comic book action, which is part of why we read.
Yeah.
There's long, long stretches of just like, you know, with the heroes fighting Krampus and the
and
little
demons. Well, just the fact that you have superheroes in the Marvel Universe fighting Krampus with the son of Satan.
Right.
Who's a hero? Son of, you know.
In this Hellstrom. Particular, right. And the story points out that he's not all, you know, I mean, it starts off with a, you know, what does he say? I hate this infernal holiday.
That's right.
But yet he's marching around the toy. So we never find out exactly why Damian Hellstrom, the son of Satan, is marching around a toy store dressed in a Santa Claus outfit.
Exactly.
But for some reason, he is in a toy store walking around dressed in a Santa Claus outfit. It doesn't really matter why.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have to explain it to you.
Nope. It's just the fact that there he, of course, on Christmas Eve, he, you know, the son of Satan would be wearing a Santa Claus outfit in a toy store.
They both Luke Cage and Danny Rand call him out on, you know, aren't you a villain? And he's like, oh, you're binary ideas of morality. there's a lot more to it than that.
Right.
And it's like, that's great. Give it to the son of Satan to show shades of gray. Also, I do like the fact that Krampus's Damien explains that there are many hells, and they find it opening to the hell that Krampus is from. And he explains it as the Bridgeport, Connecticut of hells, which just is so wonderfully evocative. Yes. And of course, in the climax, we have Santa Claus himself coming to the rescue.
St. Nicholas. St. Nicholas is a badass warrior.
Yes, he is.
And again, not the first time he's been presented as such. And of course, historically and mythologically, he of course is, but that it's used that way in this comic, as opposed to, you know, the jolly old Saint Nick showing up and ho-hoing his way to a resolution. No, it's Santa Claus kicking ass.
Yes. Yeah, he does. He even has his superhero landing upon entering the battle. Yeah. It's all, I think the whole thing is just lovely, and they all get to work together as, you know, team up stories always need to do. They all,
in the spirit of the season.
Yeah. They all work together to beat Krampus. I just, I love this little story. When I first read it a couple of years ago, I thought, why are we not reading this every year to our children?
Well, and I think that's part of the thing is these issues are, you know, these are stories that you could go back, you know, because none of them are long. You're not reading a long arc of something. You're not.
Right.
It is not required that you know anything about comics. They merely exist as stories that you can go back. And if you're feeling kind of warm and fuzzy and you got the lights on your tree, or you have your other holiday decorations up, whatever it is, you know, you get a snowy night, you curl up on your couch, and you can read a few sort of escapist Christmas comics. These are perfect.
Yep. David Walker just made this a lot of fun. Just in general, if anyone hasn't read this Power Man Iron Fist run, this is just a lot of fun. I wish it was still going.
But he's moving on.
Yeah, but Marvel, they don't know a good thing when they got it.
Apparently not.
So that's it. That's our Christmas special. I hope everyone enjoyed it. So we will be actually on a bit of a hiatus for 3 weeks. 3 weeks?
We're taking Christmas and New Year's off, so we won't be recording again until 3 weeks from now, because the next 2 weeks are holidays weekend. Yes.
So I just wanted to get this out before all that happened. But when we come back, Brian, it'll be your choice.
It will be my choice. And for our next podcast next year, we will be reading Sandman Mystery Theater.
And
in issues 21 through 28, which encompasses two of the stories, Dr. Death and The Night of the Butcher. And so these are written by Matt Wagner and Steven Seagal, with art by Guy Davis and Vince Locke.
Steven Seagal?
Steven Seagal. Steven Seagal.
I thought Steven Seagal was in a new career now.
Well, he is in a new career, yes. Matt Wagner, Steven T. Seagal, Guy Davis, and Vincent Locke. And again, it's Sandman Mystery Theater.
All right. That's fantastic. So everyone, I hope you have a happy holiday, wonderful new year. And if you could let us know your thoughts and feelings, follow us on Twitter at Collected Ed Pod, that's Collected EV Pod, or go to our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, where you can leave comments on individual episodes like this one. You can also send us an email if you're the old-fashioned type at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. Until next time, though, I guess just keep reading comics.
Yeah, and happy holidays, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at collectededpod, that's collected, E-D-P-O-D. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
That was our holiday edition.
Whee!
Whee! That was a lot of fun.
It was.
These were great choices by both of us, I think.
I agree.
I'm glad I own that holiday special.
Oh, the Batman Adventures? Yes, yeah, Batman I was... Yeah, as far as I could tell, I couldn't find it in anything else, which seems strange to me, particularly with how sort of seminal the Harley and the Ivy is. Because it was turned into, I guess I can't remember if I mentioned it or not, but it was turned into...
an episode. I thought it was. I thought it was, but I didn't want
to... So the comic came first, and then it proved to be so popular that they made an episode out of it. Probably something I should have mentioned somewhere along the line, but you know what? That's okay.
You know what? You did. I could actually take that and drop it in at the end.
Oh, excellent. Oh, the power of editing.